Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
It's always the hidden stuff that nobody sees that sometimes is the funniest. Me and Francois, we were up here cracking up. Baby, she didn't want to go, but she eventually got over it. The other thing that's funny is, first of all, it's been great. I've really enjoyed the song service that we've been having. Francois has been doing a great job, but this is the first Sunday in like 3 weeks where I've had my own water. See, what you all don't know and I haven't told you is that Francois has a theft problem. He has a problem with stealing other people's drinks. And so every Sunday I get up here and it's like, man, he brought his own water today, but he was getting confused and he was just reaching for any water he could grab, right? And that's been happening. So, you know, he's like, I come down and he's like, hey, I come back from doing something. He'll be like, hey, my bad, I'm sorry. I drank out of your water. You know, last week I was starting to think, well, maybe this is intentional. Like, maybe he, you know. So I thought maybe I'll just start buying cheap water or something, you know. Don't bring the good stuff. But, no, I really have appreciated it. It's been, you know, great. The song service really, you know, just preparing us. And as we look to finish up today and close out our series that we've done for the past couple of months on spiritual health and really understanding what it means to be healthy spiritually, how we go about our goals to be spiritually healthy, I want to close out and talk about exactly what it means to take care of our spiritual health. And by that, I'm talking about something that we could kind of just sum up in a really simple question. Like, whose responsibility is it to take care of our spiritual health? And a lot of times what happens is, without even knowing, without even thinking about it, we can almost get sidetracked. We can get distracted into thinking about a lot of other things that affect us, when in reality, the one person who's responsible for our spiritual health, same with our physical health, is us, the individual. And yet we think, well, you know, the church matters and it's important. We have relationships. We've been doing our boot camp. We've been talking about discipling relationships. We've been talking about all these different things. And yet, when we really think about it, who is ultimately responsible for our spiritual health? And so the title of the sermon today is Big Pharma. I've used this because I remember back, what was it, 2009, I guess it was, or 10, when they were going through all the debates about healthcare and what was eventually known as the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, right? And how you had all these conversations and people were talking about the pharmaceutical industry and how they were lobbying, you know, right down the street here in D.C., how they're lobbying all these congressmen and senators trying to get certain things put into the bill and certain things taken out. You had all these arguments. And I remember one of the things they talked about was the individual mandate. You know, the idea that if you don't have health coverage, if you don't have insurance, that you have to pay a certain price, a certain fee. And there were a lot of young people that were mad because they thought, well, I'm young and I'm healthy and I don't need to go to the doctor all the time. I don't need any particular medicine. And all of that conversation kind of lost sight of what the bigger picture was, which is, A, we all want to live, we all want to be healthy, but what responsibility does the pharmaceutical industry or the doctor, what do they actually have a responsibility to do for us? And how much of our health should be our own responsibility? And so I want to look at that strictly from a scriptural standpoint and looking at that spiritually, because when you think about it, our health is made up of a bunch of different things. Yes, we have to go to the doctor. Yes, we have to get checked out. But most of it is what we do to ourselves and what we do for ourselves, right? So I want to start in John chapter 5, and I want to look at a story about a guy who needed to take some initiative about his spiritual state. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there in Jerusalem, near the sheep gate, a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here, a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I am trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." Then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat, and walk." At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. The day on which this took place was a Sabbath. And so the Jewish leaders said to the man who had been healed, "It is the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat." But he replied, "The man who made me well said to me, 'Pick up your mat and walk.'" So they asked him, "Who is this fellow who told you to pick it up and walk?" The man who was healed had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Later, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, "See, you are well again. Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you." The man went away and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had made him well. So we see this scenario where this guy, and you think, you know, anybody who's been sick goes, you know, I know men, a lot of times we struggle with this where it's like, it really has to get bad before you go to the doctor. Hopefully it doesn't take you 38 years before you decide you're going to go to the doctor. But we see this guy where he sits and he's been at the side of this pool. Now, one of the interesting things is verse 4 is not included in most translations anymore, unless you look in the King James. It actually spells out why this pool was so special. What it was is the people believed that this pool, what would happen is this pool would start stirring and start moving, and people would rush to hurry up and try to get into this pool. And so the people who were unable to move or were able to move quickly would lay close to it so that as soon as it started stirring, they could just kind of, you know, hurry up and get in. They believed that God's angels were stirring this pool. And so anybody who got in, when they got out, they would be healed. But it would be like one person, right? And so they actually believed this. And so you had people who sat around this pool waiting to be healed. And they showed up regularly and all the time. And this guy had been there for so long that Jesus actually goes up to him and he's thinking, "You've been here for almost 4 decades. Do you want to get well?" Because if you think, if you've been somewhere for almost 40 years, at some point you have to question, not necessarily whether or not the person believes and has placed their faith in this thing, but if after 38 years you still haven't gotten in, one has to question, how bad do you want it? How bad do you want it? You would think at some point you could have paid somebody or tricked somebody or just, you know, lay there at the edge, and as soon as it starts stirring, you roll in. Like, there's got to be something that you could do. And so Jesus questions this man's own desire. Do you even want this? You know, sometimes spiritually, we can be in a condition that we've been in for so long that we have to almost question and think, well, do you really want to be well? We see that improving your spiritual conditions begins with taking ownership of where you place your faith. See, they place their faith in this pool. But when Jesus approaches him and he says, "Do you want to be made well?" and he gives him his reasons and his rationales and excuses, he then tells him, "Get up and walk." And so he does it. Now that he's healed, now he's walking. Now he's walking away and he's carrying his mat, and his faith is no longer in this pool. His faith is now in Jesus. His faith is in him. You know, and even as it goes on, it's so interesting because you see where Pharisees, they say, "Well, Who is this that told you to pick up your mat and carry it off on the Sabbath? Never even considering the fact that this man for 38 years has been laying by the side of this pool. You would think, well, who was it that healed you? They weren't interested in who was healing him. They were interested in who told you to break this rule. See, I bring all of this up because sometimes when we think about our condition spiritually, and I've heard it, I'm sure you've heard it, people have talked about it where, you know, I feel like I need to be in a place where I can grow spiritually, I can be spiritually fed, where I can be taught, where I can be trained. I want to go to a church where people, I get along with them and I mesh with them and we have things in common, or there's things I like about it, or, you know, there's all these churches. And yet, at the end of the day, what Jesus is showing here with this man is, you place your faith in me. You place your faith in me, not this pool, not these organizations, not these arbitrary things. You place your faith in me. Our understanding and our discipline and our willingness to be spiritually healthy and take the initiative to be spiritually healthy starts with us first placing our faith in him. And then when he says, get up and walk, you get up and walk. You do what you're told. You do what Jesus tells you to do. You know, it was interesting. I was joking with Jimmy because I told Jimmy I was going to talk about him. And he just kind of looked at me with his Jimmy face. Like, oh, okay. Well, as long as you don't, he said, as long as you don't say it behind my back. And I said, no, I'll be right in front of you. But the thing is, I remember having a conversation with Jimmy. It's been a couple months, a few months actually. And he talked about how for a very long time, many years, that he just really wasn't growing. He wasn't spiritually putting forth the effort. He wasn't really trying. He didn't know exactly what to do. There was just all these different questions and doubts. And what's interesting is I had a conversation with a few weeks back. They were saying how, and I won't put them on the spot because then I'd have to tell you all of what they said about Jimmy. But the point is, they said something. They said, I don't even recognize him anymore. He's a different person. It's like I don't even know him. And I've known him for years. I've known him for a very long time, but he looks totally different. See, what happens is, and I raise up Jimmy as an example, and it's a great example, because at some point, you can be so caught up in church and so caught up with doing these things that you know you're supposed to do that you forget that your growth, your maturation, your spiritual development is your responsibility. You go from all of a sudden being able to do nothing to all of a sudden now you're walking and you're picking up your mat and you're carrying it and you're doing everything. You all smelled the food when you came in. You know, Jimmy was making breakfast for the kids. You know, I don't have to go back there and press record anymore because Jimmy's taking care of the sound. There's so much that can be done. And I only bring that up because a lot of times we think of ourselves by our limitations instead of realizing that there's plenty that I could be doing for God. There's plenty of ways I could be contributing if I would just pick up my mat and walk and do what Jesus told me to do. I don't know if any of you all recognize this guy. His name is Farmer Bro. Actually, that's his nickname. His real name is Martin Shkreli. Now, he became famous because he just recently got convicted of a crime. Basically, he had a hedge fund and, you know, he's going to jail for 7 years. He's actually quite the villain. He became quite the focus of everybody's, you know, anger because he was the head of a pharmaceutical company that raised the price on these drugs, right? There was one in particular. Yeah, he's a real mess. But he raised the price on one of them. There's this rare disease that affects your kidneys and everything. He raised the price of it from what was $1.50 per pill to like $30 per pill, right? And everybody was totally outraged and just angry and upset. And then later, there was a, and I don't remember the name, so I'm not going to even try it, but there was another drug, and it was the only one of its kind. They didn't have a generic or another form of it that was used to help people who were, who had HIV and AIDS. And he raised the price of that one from, which was fairly expensive, $13.50 per pill, to $750 a pill, right? And his attitude was, well, we'll make, maybe, you know, Congress, or maybe they need to make exceptions for those who got it innocently, but I'm not going to lower the price of this pill for people who have HIV and AIDS because they deserve to be sick. And you think, how demented can that be? Like, how off can you be to have such a cruel attitude towards people? And then even, you know, after he left the company and they fired him, they never lowered the price of the drug. But ultimately what happens is we forget that at the end of the day, he becomes an easy target, just like churches. We can complain about churches. We can complain about preachers. I know none of you would do that. Certainly not today. But you can complain about preachers and leadership, and we can almost get to the point. We focus so much on external things and the people we don't like or somebody who did something to us that we forget what we're really fighting about. We forget what it is that we're really supposed to be focused on. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 10. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Therefore, put on the full armor of God so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground. And after you have done everything to stand, stand firm then with the belt of truth buckled around your waist, with the breastplate of righteousness in place, and with your feet fitted with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. In addition to all this, take up the shield of faith with which you can extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. And pray in the Spirit on all occasions with all kinds of prayers and requests. With this in mind, be alert and always keep on praying for all the Lord's people. Pray also for me that whenever I speak, words may be given me so that I will fearlessly make known the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in chains. Pray that I may declare it fearlessly as I should. We see here, he says, let's refocus this thing. Let's think about this. Let's try to make some sense of this. Your battle is not against other human beings. Your battle is, as I said, not against flesh and blood. It's not against that individual. See, oftentimes we can focus our angst and our ire and our frustration on the person or the people and not realize that all of this is a spiritual endeavor. All the things that we go through, even here, even within this congregation, the things that we go through, it's not about me or any particular individual. It's we're fighting against evil. We're fighting against evil that's trying to take us away from God, that's trying to take our attention and our focus away. So, you know, a situation comes up where I don't like what someone did to me. And instead of seeing that as an opportunity, like we talked about last week, instead of it being an opportunity for me to see how I can forgive someone, it becomes an opportunity to focus on why I don't like that person. It becomes a situation where I withdraw. Well, that's what Satan wants you to do. The only thing is he used an individual to get you to do it. It's kind of like I was saying, you know, Martin Shkreli, he's a bit of a clown. Like, we can accept the fact that he's not somebody that any of us want to spend any real significant time with. But if you focus on him, you can miss the larger point. The larger point is that each of us has to take our own spiritual health the same way we do our physical health. If your hand is turning colors and you don't know if it's broken or bruised or you got a clot, whatever, it's not everybody else's responsibility to go to the hospital. Yes, we could take you. Yes, we could encourage you. But ultimately, it's your hand. It's your foot. It's your heart. It's your body. We're all going to have to give an account for how we live. I'm not going to have to answer for Pat. I'm not going to have to answer for George. I'm not going to have to answer for anybody. I'm going to have to answer for me. I'm going to have to give an account for me. And so it's important that we always understand that when it comes to our spiritual health, we have to take initiative. If you don't like what the preacher's saying on Sunday, well, you know what you could do about that, right? Don't say it. I have a better answer. What you could do is focus your time and your energy on you, in your home, in your time, praying, reading, spending more time with God in your time. Yes, we come together here, but this is a couple of hours in a week. We talked about that last week. What are you doing? How are you worshiping? How are you filling up your spirit? We're all intelligent. We're all intelligent enough to read the words on this paper. We're all intelligent enough to be able to understand the scriptures. But are we taking that responsibility? Or are we laying on our mat saying, nobody will help me, when Jesus has already given us enough help? This is a picture, an illustration from one of my favorite movies, The Lion King. Those of you all who don't know, I'm not going to bore you with the details. If you haven't seen it by now, you're probably not going to see it. It's one of the highest grossing and most popular Disney movies of all time. It's been on Broadway. Worldwide, everybody knows The Lion King. And much of it centers around this guy. Name is Simba. Simba was the heir to the throne, Pride Rock. He had this really special relationship with his dad, who I love because James Earl Jones did the voice. And he's going through all these challenges and changes because his uncle wants to take the throne. And so he goes along and he not only kills Simba's father, but he also then frames Simba for it and blames him, runs him off. He goes off into the wilderness and he grows up with Timon and Pumbaa. And he basically takes a carefree attitude towards the world. He basically says, you know what? I don't want to go back. It hurts too much. I don't want to deal with it. And he has this encounter with the wise baboon Rafiki. And there's this part where Rafiki, they're having this conversation. Looks like the winds are changing. Ah, change is good. Simba replies, yeah, but it's not easy. I know what I have to do, but going back means I have to face my past. I've been running from it for so long. So Rafiki smacks him across the head with his stick. He says, ow, geez, what was that for? It doesn't matter. It's in the past. Rubbing his head, he says, yeah, but it still hurts. Oh, yes, the past can hurt, but the way I see it, you can either run from it or learn from it. This is a lesson that you only have to live as long as these cartoon characters. Anybody who's lived knows that there's part of their past. There's part of the things that are hurts, regrets, things that make you feel like I don't want to try anymore. I've given up. I'm just going to settle to stay where I am. And yet, even in just looking at something as simple as a Disney movie, we see the lesson that Jesus is trying to constantly teach us. And I want to look in John chapter 21. We'll see a very clear example of this. Starting in verse 15, he says, "When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?' 'Yes, Lord,' he said, 'you know that I love you.' Jesus said, 'Feed my lambs.' Again, Jesus said, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me?' He answered, 'Yes, Lord, you know that I love you.' Jesus said, 'Take care of my sheep.' The third time he said to him, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me?' Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, 'Do you love me?' He said, 'Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you.' Jesus said, 'Feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you are younger, you dress yourselves and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go.' Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, 'Follow me.'" Peter is very significant when we think about owning, taking ownership of our spiritual growth, our spiritual health. Peter made a lot of mistakes. Peter said a lot of things that later on he would go on to regret. Peter, even after this, will continue to have to be taught and trained and developed because he wasn't finished growing. But what we see here with Peter, as we've talked about in the past, is a direct contrast with Judas. Judas gave up. Judas quit. He hung himself. Peter comes back, even after denying Jesus, who he said he would never deny. Even after his sin, even after making mistakes, Peter came back. He faced it, but in order to face it, he had to own it. Loving Jesus is a decision that is always made by imperfect people who allow him to transform them. What we see here is that if we're going to take ownership, not focus on the boogeyman out there, not focus on this distraction out there, not complain about what we're not getting here, what we're not getting there. At some point, we, as the individual, have to take ownership. There was this article I read, and there was a few points here. One thing about taking ownership, there was this list he talked about how to become spiritually stronger. It says, face your pain. Sometimes it's the hardest thing to do. We have to face our pain. We have to deal with it. Learn from your mistakes. Be willing to admit that, hey, I've made some mistakes, but I'm not going to just sit on them. I'm going to learn from them. Don't blame others. Don't blame others. Don't point the finger at others and make them the scapegoat for your spiritual condition. Release judgments. Sometimes we judge people and we hold people to these standards, and we need to let those things go. Learn to forgive. In another month or so, we're going to be talking about this in a series very specifically. Learning to forgive the way that God forgave us. Hold life sacred. Life is very important. It's not something that we can just take for granted. It isn't something that, you know, is just, well, you know, we just have life. No, life is something that's very precious. We need to take it very seriously. Live in the present. Make sure that we're living in the present, not focusing on the past. Yeah, we can't control our future, and you can't do anything about the past. But you can do something about right now. A few questions. Am I waiting on someone or someones to get me closer to God, or do I take my spiritual condition personally and act proactively? Is my spiritual condition my responsibility, or am I focused on the pharmaceutical companies and the doctors and the higher prices of everything? What am I doing to maintain my relationship with God? Do I blame people who have hurt me in the past for why I'm not where I need to be in my relationship with God. This is very important because a lot of times I've talked to many people. There are legitimate hurts. There are legitimate wrongs. We're all men. So men and women. So we're humans and we're going to make mistakes. And so we've all been done wrong. There isn't a time. There isn't a person in here who can't say that they've been done wrong, that they've been hurt, that they've got scars. But are you allowing that to keep you away? Do you blame other people? Are you taking it, your spiritual health, taking it upon yourself? Do I have a godly view of what the church should mean in my life? Have I allowed traditions or the way things are in the church to keep me from having faith in the right things? This points us directly back to that pool. Because a lot of times people come to the church and then they get disappointed because their expectations were not met. I thought somebody was going to love me. I thought somebody was going to encourage me. I thought somebody was going to give me more. I thought I was going to get something when I got to the church. Just like that man said, I thought that in 38 years, I would have gotten in that pool by now and I would have gotten healed. He places faith in that pool. And too often we place our faith in man. We place our faith in the church, but we place it there in a very disproportionate way. We have to place our faith in God, not in this institution, because the fact is we're going to mess up. People are going to mess up. You're going to get hurt. Life is a contact sport, as I heard someone say. And then finally, are my spiritual battles focused on people that I deal with as obstacles to overcome, or why God has those people in my life? Do I understand people and relationships from the standpoint of this is what God is using this person to do, or do I focus on the fact that the person may or may not have done something that I did or didn't like? Do we have a healthy understanding of why God has you here today? Do we understand it as well? It's because it's Sunday and I came to church and I came and listened to you last time. You sounded okay, so I came back again. Do I really understand church? Do I understand what the church is for appropriately? Do I see it? Do I see the people for what God is really trying to use them to do? Or am I just focused on the people? Because it's very easy. We've talked about this. It's very easy for me to point out the flaws. You know, it's very easy for me to pick apart all the things wrong with the person. Sometimes it's harder and it requires us to really give it to God for us to see that even when we're in a difficult relationship, even when we don't understand the relationship, God is using that relationship. God doesn't need any of us to be perfect for us to be able to help one another to grow. Because he's perfect. His timing is perfect. Is it time for you to take a very hard step and a very deliberate step towards owning your spiritual condition, to owning your spiritual health? Is that, if that's something for you today, if it's not for you to blame anybody and you're tired of pointing fingers, but you actually, as it says in the King James, you want to be made whole, like Jesus talks to that man that's laying by the pool. If this is a time where you want to be made well, we ask you to come forward so that we can pray for you as a church, so that we can help you, because we want to help each other in our goals to become more like Jesus. We want to help one another. We want to build one another up and lift one another up. We want to take it to prayer because we have faith that God is what is going to be the difference. He is what's going to change us. Please stand as we sing our song of invitation.